The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Blood Rain, The Third Reich from 2011. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. We would also like to add that the following podcast also contains descriptions of some rather adult scenes. Can it redeem the series, or is it just going to make matters worse? We watched A Blood Rain, The Third Reich, to see if it was redeemable. Were we successful? Find out after this theme.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad guy love, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello, and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast. This time, looking at Blood Rain, The Third Reich from 2011. I am your host, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host...
Christian Fletcher, still shuddering and reeling from the devastation of Blood Rain 3. Thank you, Trevor, for having me on board again.
My pleasure. Did you give a little bit of a way of your opinion already on this movie, Christian? Did I just hear that?
I don't know. I think it was more just a shudder in this mention of the name of the film that really brought it out of me. But yeah, no, I don't want to reveal too much more. But it's a doozy for both of us and for the audience. So I'll be interested to hear your thoughts about this catastrophe. Okay, enough said.
Yeah, well, we always make it clear that these things are going to have spoilers, so we've got spoilers already for this podcast. That just seems perfect in some way, but we'll see how we get there. It's all in the journey. I don't think anybody out there seriously expects this to be a good movie.
Oh, definitely not. You know, I think I even read somewhere saying, you know, if you hated the first one, you'll hate the second one even more, and the third one. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I get the feeling the series hasn't really had a very big following to start with, so that can only go down from here.
Yeah, I think they tried to make it a cult movie thing, and it couldn't even get that far. So, but before we go too much into that, we probably should talk a bit about the movie first. Now, I've got a synopsis here for those that... who are unaware of this movie and what it's about. So, half vampire, half human. Rain hides in the shadows, slaughtering vampires and those that get in her way. In 1943 Europe, during World War II, Rain faces her greatest foe, a growing army of undead Nazi soldiers led by Erhard Brand, a top Nazi official turned daywalker. Rain must team up with a group of resistance fighters to defeat Brand and his vampire army before they reach Berlin to grant Hitler immortality.
Oh, Trevor, your plot summary sounded just so much better than what was actually unfolded on screen. So I thought it was strange, you know, from the outset to see the series go into sort of Nazi exploitation genre. Like, it's quite unusual, you know, from the progression of the second one. I think from memory, I've wiped most memory of it from, you know, from my mind, but from number two was set in the Wild West or something along those lines, or that sort of era, the 1800s or something.
That's right. Billy the Kid and his gang of vampires.
That's right. Oh, how quickly I forgot. Yeah. But what I thought was really interesting is, and it's kind of, it's throughout history, and God, Trevor, you know how much I love a sequel. But you look through history, and it's usually by the third film in a franchise that they start to go a little bit bonkers, you know, because the second film is usually continuing ideas of the first one. And by the third one, it's the producers going, yeah, we can do something a little bit different or something totally different. And so I thought it was quite, you know, obviously quite logical for them to go sort of an unusual angle, but to go to the Nazi exploitation genre straight away, it just seemed like not the most logical step. But as you said, being, you know, if the other one was set in the 1800s, the next one being set somewhere in the 20th century possibly makes sense, but I thought it was such a strange choice from the outset, so I thought we were in for an interesting ride with that.
Well, I mean, it is based on a computer game, and I have actually played the games, which are way better than these movies. And the second one does take place in World War II, and she's fighting Nazis. So in some ways, this is kind of following the game, even though at the end of the day, it's got nothing to do with the game, aside from the fact that she's fighting Nazis.
Well, that puts it in a bit more of a context for me. So, yeah, that I kind of give them a bit more of credit for that. But, yeah, I see what you mean. When you're saying the computer game is more exciting than the movie, that says a lot.
Fair enough. Well, before we go too much more into that, I thought we'd better get the turkey trivia out of the way, talk about the facts and figures and a bit of information about the movie before we start working our way through and seeing if we can redeem this. So on IMDb, it got a grand total of 3 out of 10 stars. And in a surprising twist when it comes to this sort of movie, which is usually made for the direct-to-DVD market, I actually found the budget. The budget of this movie was $10 million.
Wow, I actually find that hard to believe. Gosh, and as you said, also hard to believe that you were able to find the figures, because usually they keep them quite hidden on the direct-to-DVD angle.
Yeah, I thought it was a misprint at first, and it should have been 10,000, but I double-checked, and it was definitely 10 million.
Oh my gosh, I'd love to know where half of that money went. It was possibly trying to do the faux World War II setting, I don't know.
Well, perhaps on the blood splatter. A bit more on that later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Well, with a movie called Blood Rain, it makes sense to have the blood raining, I suppose. So, yeah, I can understand that for the budget. But can we continue?
Absolutely. Now, I couldn't find too much trivia on this. The passion for trivia on this movie seems quite low. Sad, really. But it was filmed in 1 month, February through March. Pretty much from the 15th of February to the 14th of March is what's listed as the filming dates. And
gosh.
And the trivia side seems to focus more on things that aren't quite right. So the only bit of trivia I could really find was when Rain enters the boxcar during the opening fight, she is carrying her two swords. When she's attacked inside the car, her swords have vanished from her hands.
So they didn't waste time to get into it.
No, I had to find something to put in there for a bit of trivia.
Oh, I was going to say, I think I read somewhere too that a common thing done sort of as in the horror genre, I suppose, but they were filming another movie called Blubberella, which I believe is an obese version of Barbarella, I suppose. I don't know if that's what you'd call it, but they simultaneously were filming that whilst they filmed Blood Rain 3 and were utilising a lot of the sets and a lot of the costumes and sort of things like that. So I wonder if that would be a lot to do with, I don't know, maybe a lot of the budget things. But, hey, that would mean the budget should have been less than what it was. But, yeah, I thought that was quite interesting. And I wonder if some of the shots from the movies got mixed up because it became quite confusing in some spots.
Yeah, well, but yeah, perhaps that $10 million was for both of those movies being filmed at the same time.
I must admit, I think I'd prefer to see Blubberella than Blood Rain 3, just from title's sake. But anyway, we continue.
Absolutely. So on the redeeming features, we like I said, we take movies that are considered bad, and this one certainly fits that category nicely. And we give ourselves a baseline. So what I've done is I've gone and sourced a review off Amazon to give us that baseline to work off. Now, this one has the grand total of blindness is preferable to this cinematic bile. Seriously. As a huge fan of the first Blood Rain video game, I was somewhat interested to see that Uwe Boll had finally decided to place the character Blood Rain into the historical setting of World War II. I wish I had not been interested. I think I would actually prefer a frontal lobotomy to having even the slightest interest in seeing this film. I cannot unsee Blood Rain the Third Reich. I will gladly try and save you from this trauma. First, the only similarities between Blood Rain the video game and Blood Rain the Third Reich is the historical setting of WW2. That's it. Do not fool yourselves. Secondly, without boring you with a complete synopsis, let me simply give you some quick comparisons. your cousin's dance recital that your mum forced you to attend, it had better production values than this. The drama class you took in college for the easy A, it had better acting than this. The porn you found in your dad's closet when you were 13, it had better directing than this. The Battlestar Galactica fanfiction your little brother wrote that starred himself, it had a more coherent and story-driven plot than Blood Rain the Third Reich. This is not a film that is so bad it's good, it's just bad. It's just horrible. It's a cinematic equivalent of being chased by a pack of wolves while your dentist tries to perform an emergency root canal without painkillers type of bad. A single star is 1,000 times more merciful than this film deserves. Do not ever see this film. Not as a joke, not because you're a cinematic masochist, not because you think it's a cult classic type material. Because if you do, you're encouraging Uwe Boll to continue producing and directing. And then you are part of the problem. May whatever god you worship have mercy on your soul. You have been warned. One star.
Oh, it's hilarious. Oh my god, I must admit I found myself nodding in a lot of places with that one, but oh gosh, that sounds like, it seems like a very enraged, I can't say fan, enraged viewer that obviously came to Amazon to vent after a bad viewing, which would be all viewings of this film. But yeah, that actually reminded me, I think I read that Uwe Boll was actually in plan to make a fourth one at the moment, and I'm like, gosh, I think he needs to read that review.
Oh, I wasn't aware that they were planning a fourth one. You know, I was hoping we could put Blood Rain to bed after this, having covered all three, but if he makes a fourth one, we're doomed.
Oh, well, that's what I was thinking. The first thing that went through my mind is, oh, no, the fact that it, not that he's making another one, but the fact that we'd have to watch it. So, yeah, maybe I should try and, you know, I'm going to squash. I shouldn't have told you, damn it. Oh, well. So, the third one, unfortunately, it would go down even further, I think. But one thing that stood out to me, Trevor, was, which is something I know we always speak about here on the podcast, was the length of the film. 1 hour and 14 minutes. I was like, yes. You know, finally, a good length for film, and I might add, listeners, as soon as you 30 minutes into 1 hour 14 film, when you still have to look at your watch, yeah, things aren't good. But a big thing that stood out to me was, and I've noticed a lot of filmmakers will do this if they need to flesh out something that possibly would have only been, say, 1 hour, but needed to be sort of feature length, they'd have quite long opening and closing credits. I timed them, Trevor, and the opening credits were 5 minutes, and the closing credits were 6 minutes. So 11 minutes of 1 hour and 14 movie was credits. So, I don't know, that kind of made me go, okay, we've got 1-hour-long concept here, pretty much the concept for a television show, I don't know. So that was one thing that stood out. So I'm not going to get fooled anymore by the length of a film, because I still found myself, panicking with the length. So
Well, hey, this is one gave you a flashback to the first movie, along with the stock footage of the Nazis, with the expositional narration over the top. So, you know, it lets you know what was going on before it started.
Yeah, it didn't waste any time getting into it, I must admit. Like, I don't know if it was the copy that I had, but, yeah, it just seemed to, you know, as soon as you clicked play movie, it was going. So I felt, you know, and I've actually got a note here about the whole stock footage and how they felt like they, you know, they used it quite a bit. But, hey, it set up the established the scene for us anyway.
Indeed. Now, the other thing I noticed too, I mean, with those opening credits, I think the film production company, Event Film, was a bit promising a bit too much for what was to come. I don't know if I could really call this an event movie as such. But at least with this one, the main actress, Natasha Mulkey, I think that's how you pronounce her name, or Mulkey, came back from number two for number three, unlike Christina Loken, who was Blood Rain in the first movie. So, you know, a bit of continuation, a bit of consistency across the two movies. I mean, that's a nice touch, isn't it?
Oh, well, I think, yeah, we've got to look for any kind of nice touch, don't we? But I know that originally in the early days of the podcast, you reviewed Blood Rain 1. I didn't actually do that one. But so, yeah, so 2 and 3, I must admit, having just seen 2 and 3, it was good to have that familiarity and not sort of be like, you know, like we're starting afresh again, even though it was a very vague familiarity. So, but, you know, as soon as seeing the character again, it was good to, good to have that recognition. Yeah. But, yeah, that's pretty much where it ended for me.
Yeah, I like to think of her as the samurai in DOA, Dead or Alive. That's how I prefer to see Natasha rather than seeing her as Blood Rain. I just got to admit that.
Yeah, no, but it seems like a lot of these actresses seem to go the same sort of route for the type of films that they're in, these sort of direct-to-DVD action things. I actually found, just a little bit off subject, but I found it really interesting that when I was reading about this film, it being referred to as an adventure horror film, and I'm like, well, obviously the horror there being the vampire, but yeah, it's sort of, I don't know, as soon as you brought it into that sort of Nazi world, it wasn't so much horror, it was more sort of a thriller or an action. I don't know, I don't know if that's me getting really picky there, but it wasn't a horror film by any stretch for me.
Yeah, it was probably more a gory action film rather than a horror film. I will agree with you on that one. And it didn't take long to get into the blood splattery, swingy, choppy action either, so...
Oh no, definitely, and you know, I'm pretty sure that the main audience for this wouldn't just be the video game. I'm assuming it would be for heterosexual males. There was quite a lot of stuff that was put in there, you know, like the use of the sex scene so much. And God, I did have another note here, and I can't find it, but something that they did that stood out to me. It'll come back to me.
Yeah, that's fine.
That I thought was so, set for that kind of audience where they just kind of like, we don't give a shit, we're just going to throw in whatever we want in this film and to appeal to that kind of, I suppose, when we're thinking about what we're talking about, an event film, you know, they're probably thinking this is a film that a group of guys are going to watch while drinking beer and eating pizza around a table. I don't know. But, it so didn't become that kind of a film. But yeah, no, like that sort of the gratuitous, orgy scene at the brothel, you know, that was just kind of, just sort of put there for, I'm wondering if that's for a certain, type of audience.
Potentially, but before that turned up, because I did find the cleavage, is to say, very prominent throughout this movie with the outfit she's wearing, and was quite distracting. But considering the dialogue, any distraction might have been quite good. And I found myself just wondering how she was actually staying in that, and she wasn't popping out, when suddenly, nude, getting a massage in a bordello, and okay, she's not going to be staying in that outfit. And then, yeah, that whole gratuitous lesbian sex scene as a prize for preventing the other prostitute from being beaten up by a soldier. It was like, that just kept on going. And I know you're saying, obviously, it's there to appeal to a certain audience, but, I'm a heterosexual male, and I'm just thinking, this just isn't good. This just needs to stop, because it has... No, it's not sexy. It's just not good at all.
Yeah, and it was coming in a really sort of a weird spot where it just sort of, it was just sort of not necessary. But hey, when you've got a film that's, they've got to fill an hour and what was it we took away, 11, so an hour and 3 minutes that you've got to fill, that would have taken about 3 minutes of it. So hey, there's some of your running time gone, so... That would have been a lot of what was on their mind, I think.
Yeah. But I tell you what, I couldn't understand that, because like I'm trying not to focus on that scene, but there's something about it I was trying to work out. So she saves the other prostitute, then the two prostitutes are in the hallway, come and offer her a free massage that goes into sexy time with one of them. The other one's lurking outside the door until she hears things start, and then she runs off to go tell the local German officers that this woman that they're looking for is at the bordello. So it's like, were they just doing that? Were they both in on that plan? And, he just goes, okay, you go and have sexy time with her and I'll go dob on her. Or was the other one just oblivious and just going, hey, you need to have sex with her because she's my hero? I couldn't work it out.
Yeah, it was quite strange. Yeah, and I would like to say it was as deep as, like you're saying, you stay there and kind of distract her while I go and do it, but I don't think they would have been even thinking about it that much. I think it literally was just that whole orgy thing was thrown in as a filler or a crowd pleaser. But yeah, I did think that was a bit strange as well, actually. But it was interesting. I remember even a part two where she has that dream about the vampire Hitler. Because all throughout the movie, you're waiting for all these sort of, like, obviously you're hearing the references to Hitler and things like that, but sort of seeing the actual, I suppose, a person playing the character in this dream. And it took me, I wasn't thinking it was a dream at first. And then obviously she wakes up and we realize it is, but I thought that was quite funny. And I thought that'd bring more of that kind of, Hitlerisms into it a little bit earlier, but it didn't sort of, it was more about, yeah, Blood Rain and her sort of dealings with the British thug. So the thug that seems like he's from a British film. Revolutionary, is that what you'd call him?
Oh, yeah. Nathaniel the Shouty is what I call him, because he just keeps on shouting. But before you go into that, I don't think it was in the dream sequence, but there was another section where she was in bed and she gets woken up for some reason. And I must admit, I almost fell off the chair laughing, because as she throws the covers back, she's in her outfit minus the cape, complete with the boots on in the bed.
I didn't even notice that. Oh my God.
Ready for action. That's our rain.
It would have been easier for costume changes too. So, oh gosh, but there's so many things we could probably uncover with this film that just sort of defy logic. But I noticed too. At first, I was thinking it was I don't know. I do watch a lot of, nowadays we're so used to that sort of cinema verite, which is that sort of shaky handheld camera, like that sort of documentary type feel. And it sort of didn't hit me at first, but later in scenes, I'm like, be a lot more prominent to me that this was pretty much a handheld camera following them around a lot of the scenes. I don't know if a lot of times they do that to sort of, give us sort of the feeling of claustrophobia or something like that. But that actually, that feeling did come across me. But I did sort of notice that. And I even wonder if that was a budget thing as well, or to give it a bit more of an action-y feel. But I don't know. That could have been it, actually.
Yeah, that style, it does help things feel more frantic, but then on the flip side, because I think a lot of this was done with close-up handheld cameras, so it got a bit hard to see just exactly what was going on in a lot of those battle scenes, aside from the fact that pretty much every time she moved an arm, whether you saw it connect with anything or not, there was just like a blood splatter or a spray of blood, including quite a few splashes onto the camera, just for effect.
Oh, yeah, they've got to have that. As I said, with a movie called Blood Rain, blood has got to rain. one person I'm surprised we haven't mentioned yet is Clint Howard. Now, I know him from appearing in so many cult films and stuff, and he always seems to crop up in, what did I see him in recently? Not Curb Your Enthusiasm, it was one of those sort of shows in sort of recent years. And he was the film. He just chewed up scenery like you wouldn't believe, and was one of those people that went, oh, God, this is terrible, let's just have bloody fun with it. And he just sort of, he really relished in that sort of mad scientist role.
Yeah, but he was so, his performance was just so terrible. Every line he did was delivered like this, every time.
Literally chewing the scenery, and I don't know if that was him just being a bad actor, or the fact that he was just going, I'm just going to camp this up as much as possible. Well, it worked in that respect, but it might not have been in fitting in line with the tone of the rest of the film, though. But he definitely stole everything.
Yeah, when he got his inevitable comeuppance at the end, considering the pain of watching him through most of the movie, I felt that he really got off lightly, and he should have got a much nastier death.
Oh, I know. I'm sure a lot more of the audience would have been cheering. Hang on, this wouldn't have screened in cinemas. This would never have screened in cinemas. But one thing I know we mentioned before, the Nathaniel guy that I've got here, the British film thug. The only reason I say that is he just seems to look, that typical beanie sort of look that you see in a lot of those, like thugs that you see in a lot of those sort of British heist films and things like that. And I actually remember noticing this with the second film, even though it's supposed to be set in a particular time, due to the cinematography and how a lot of the costuming and a lot of the acting, it sort of was a bit jarring with the different world. It was like old meets new, and we're trying to be set in the 40s, but we've got a group of people that look like it's, I don't know, a group of people in Britain, I don't know. And it even did have a bit of a British feel, some of the buildings and stuff like that. And I thought, it was a real, they weren't very historically accurate, but I suppose when you're making a film about a vampire, it can take on a life of its own, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, when you consider it, there were some actors that were attempting accents, like your good friend Clint Howard. I think he was attempting that German accent, but then
attempting some.
Yeah, you have Michael Parr, who I know I have come across his name before, but I just had a quick look at his IMDb list, and I was just like, yeah, maybe I came across him in a couple of video games, which he's been in. But him as the commandant who managed to become a half-human, half-vampire, just like Rain, after Rain gets stabbed and some of her blood falls on his face, which you get to see again in a 20-minute, like in a flashback, like not even 20 minutes into the movie. They have a flashback to that happening that you saw just not long before, just to hammer home the point to say, this is why he is like this now, okay? He was just going the... Yeah, he seemed to be going just, you know, that toffee British bad guy, you know, disaffected type, oh yes, well, I will just kill them there. That style. So even within the various ranks, there was just such a variation in performances. So I think there wasn't much direction when it came to how to actually act like these particular people when it came to making this movie.
Yeah, I don't think me being critical about them, but historical accuracy is probably, you know, it's probably our least of our problems with this film. So, you know, especially when you're seeing a lot of handheld camera work where it would have just been, you know, let's make this as cheap as possible and chuck it on DVD. Yeah, I don't think they were thinking too much about a lot of the characterizations and making them fit in with each other. So, but yeah, definitely so many variations on characters. And I think it wasn't a director reeling the actors in. It was more a director going, let's just shoot what these guys can do, and it was just such a mixed match.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah, you do that, go. No, that was probably the
grand. Yeah, and let's just hope for the best. Actually, I don't think they probably even would have watched the final edit. They probably would have just edited it together and then put it onto DVD and then onto the next thing. So it would have just been an attempted cash cow. So, but yeah, well, that's actually interesting, Trev. I know you've mentioned the budget being $10 million. Was there any results in terms of profits? I'm sorry, I can't remember. You might have mentioned.
No, absolutely nothing about that at all. I
might say something too.
Yeah, I can't imagine it sold all that well, but then apparently the legend is that Uwe Boll makes these movies in order to claim the loss for tax benefits.
Oh, okay. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. but
the quality.
But yeah, he's quite notorious for making interesting video game to movie adaptations.
Hopefully, he doesn't touch too many more.
there actually is a website called StopUweBoll.com, which is basically a petition trying to get him to stop making movies. I don't think it's worked yet. God. So there you go. Anyway,
we really should be signing it so we don't have to watch any more Blood Rain movies. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't think he's paying attention to it for some reason. I think we're getting a bit distracted here, Christian. I'm sure there's more we can talk about Blood Rain 3.
Oh, definitely. You know, I love even the fact, I think it was Clint Howard even saying, talking about our mixture of eras. Like at one stage he goes, oh, the times, they are a changing, and I'm like, oh no, you know, just little things like that. And I don't know, that I suppose that comes back again to not probably them not really caring too much about the script at all either.
Yeah,
but there were these little things that I just noticed, like even the use of, you might have to beat this out, Trevor, but use of the word motherfucker, which was in there quite a few times. And you know, I think, believe it or not, I found a trivia thing saying, you know, that didn't become popular until sort of the 50s and 60s. But, you know, they just threw that around because it's just, okay, that's just become Rain's kind of catchphrase.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, I think about halfway through, she was just walking down the street and she was just suddenly attacked by vampires. I think that was just like a very, very lame attempt to kind of tie it back into the video game where basically she fights vampires. Being a half human, half vampire, so that's her big mission. So they had to put in a bit there where she just fought some straight out vampires to, I guess, keep the video game fans happy.
But you do wonder though, if that had more of scenes like that, would it have appealed more? Okay, it wouldn't have made a bad plot any better. But yeah, I wonder if more scenes like that would have meant it would have appealed more to that sort of video game audience or fans of the video game. So I don't know. It could have been an angle to go. But from memory, that scene kind of felt like it went for a while. Not a while, but it was, you know, it was quite a a decent fight scene. So maybe they just thought, we'll just do one main one and then we've got it out of our system.
And that way we can also put some more action in this movie so that we don't have to write any more of this terrible, terrible dialogue.
Oh, and it was terrible. Maybe that's why Clint Howard defaulted to going that whole angle that he did with his performance, because the words that he was saying were just so ridiculous. So yeah. Then,
and like when that, like the prostitute we mentioned earlier, this was one thing. Another thing that just completely messed me up was, so the prostitute goes to Dob on Rain, in order to get the Germans to catch her. While she's there, the commandant, who is now a half-human, half-vampire because of blood bits on his face, decides to drain her. Then we come across her later, locked in the cell, where she's vamped out. And in comes the doctor, and he does a very grandiose speech about their plans to this prostitute, who he doesn't know, who just turned up at the gate to let the Germans have some information. And he basically unveils the entire plan and his entire vision to her before getting into the cell with her and stabbing her and destroying her. It just seemed rather pointless.
It was like he really had to get that information out, you know, some way during the, you know, during the movie, and they've just gone, oh, we'll just do it in that part there. But and then I'm thinking, oh, maybe she could have been something to do with being in on it or something. I don't know, but I don't really want to look at it being any deeper than what it was. But I think he really was just telling it to a random person to get it out of his system.
I guess so. Now well, it's time for some expositional blood telling.
But the thing is, it was quite late in the film, too, for him to be revealing all this. I suppose it was supposed to be their attempt at the climax of the film, but I can't really say that the climax was anything too thrilling, you know.
Before we get to the climax,
we don't want to get to the climax.
I mean, yeah, seriously, I wish they'd got to the climax faster watching the movie, but that's another point. But but if we just go back to the other main good guy, I guess, Nathaniel, I just got sick of him shouting. Nearly every bit of dialogue, he was shouting at someone or shouting about something or just shouting orders. He annoyed me.
Maybe whoever printed the script left the caps lock on for his lines and he was just taking them literally. But, I remember noticing that too. And I think I even read somewhere trivia related about something about his lines, but I don't know, unless it was a way, because he was one of the guys that I thought where the accents were a little bit funny. Maybe he thought he didn't have to try and put on an accent or German accent or anything like that. he could just scream his way through it and no one noticed.
Or maybe
it felt like he had to be screamed to be heard. So go.
No, maybe that was his idea of a German accent.
Could be. Hey, it would have been better than some of the people's attempts anyway. So, he was quite annoying. But he I find it quite strange when you look at the listings of the movie. He's like listed as the sort of the lead male in the film, and I thought, I don't know, he was such a sub character to me. But I think it's because he was a sub character.
Well, he was a good guy, but. I don't know how good he was, because this is another movie part. Just the scenes which stick out to me in this movie is just completely bamboozling. So a little bit of a plot thing here. So the Germans end up wiping out a lot of this force that's trying to take them down. They capture Nathaniel and Blood Rain. They put them in the back of a convoy headed off to Germany so that they can turn Hitler into an immortal half-human, half-vampire. And they leave them alone, completely unguarded, in the back of a truck where he starts groping the unconscious Rain, who wakes up, makes it to move like she's going to attack him, and then suddenly they're having sex. And again, this is the leader of the resistance force against the Germans, and a woman that the Germans know is capable of wiping out hordes of their soldiers single-handedly. Why the hell is there no guard in the back of that truck? And why didn't Rain just throw him out the window? I mean, I just... it bamboozled me. And again, it wasn't sexy.
Well, that's what I was thinking. It was probably another one of an excuse to put a gratuitous sex scene in, but, you know, they're like, oh, well, which characters can we have it between? And it just so happened that they sort of, yeah, but I was going to say fit the bill, but they obviously didn't. But, yeah, oh, it was quite strange, and it was so unnecessary too, and as you said, quite unsexy.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the two good guy leads, so I suppose, you know, you've got to have that. Because one thing that Blood Rain 2 didn't have, that the other two certainly do have, was that gratuitous nudity and sex. That was distinctly lacking from number 2, which I guess I thought they'd better bring some of that back for number 3.
Yeah, but they have to choose it to be in a Nazi-themed film, though. It just seems to be, I don't know, just such a clash of genres to me. But, yeah, as you said, now that I know it's coming from the video game origins, I can kind of see it a little bit more. But possibly should have stuck with that rather than adapting it, so.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. And again, because they weren't guarded, when the crush inevitably crashes from the survivors of the resistance, there's no one there to guard them as they just basically get out of the truck and run for the woods. These Nazis know nothing about guarding stuff.
Oh, I know. It's like they purposely showed them sort of as these dumb half-wits so that they could, I don't know, make themselves look a bit more superior as characters. I don't know. It was, I don't want to look into it too much. I think it was actually just bad filmmaking. Yeah. Bad script writing, I think.
Quite potentially. And with the gore factor, they did bring it up. They've actually brought the ante up for the gore in that final fight scene between the Germans and the remaining resistance fighters. I think there was a brief shot of some very badly makeup effect intestines coming out of a German stomach.
Right.
I've
forgotten about that.
And the defeat of the big bad Nazi vampire who decided that he wanted to keep all Rain's blood for himself and not give it to Hitler after all. Yeah, that was a bit gooey when he finally got defeated.
Yeah. But I must admit, like we were saying earlier with the scenes with the vampires and the scene with Blood Rain walking down the street and that, having that fight, if there were more scenes like that and the finale, it possibly could have been a lot more, okay, it would be a lot more gruesome though overall, but, you know, maybe the film would have, been a lot more exciting and, as you said, would have had a lot less dialogue that we would have had to grit our teeth through. So I just felt that the plot itself just wasn't really enough to hold, you know, something of feature length together. And hey, we just have to look at the length of the film to know it was barely an idea to start with. So I find that interesting. So.
But then, after that fight scene, we get to have some more stock footage as we have more narration that I pretty much ignored and remember very little of as they're showing all this stock war footage to help pad out the time a bit more. But I got to admit, The final line in the movie, for some reason, I just thought it was the best bit of dialogue uttered throughout the entire trilogy, where they open this back of this truck in this German camp, and there's Rain and all her cronies, and she finishes with, "Guten Tag, Melon Farmers." I'll do the clean version. So, for some reason, that final line, that grabbed me. I found myself suddenly liking something this character did after sitting through this excruciating movie that felt way longer than its short running time. And it's just like, you really wait until the final line of the third movie to actually give me some dialogue I like? Screw you, Uwe Boll.
Well, it's funny, Trevor. I've got the exact same line written here on my notes saying that exact line. It's probably the best part of the entire movie, and I literally felt exactly the same way. You finally, it was like you had this slump of having watched this terrible movie, and then sort of in this last minute she says that line, you're like, what? And end credits. And 6 minute end credits. But I thought exactly the same thing, and I thought, wow, if that had more of that kind of sass and that kind of attitude throughout a lot more of the movie, or had a lot more dialogue that was like that, I think it could have been a lot more fun and a lot more sort of meta and a bit more of reflective on itself. But yeah, I can't believe we've said the same thing. So, but it is a bit bad when we're both saying this about the last frame of the movie, pretty much. So,
indeed.
So that's the best thing that happened. So yeah, it topped some pretty bad dialogue, but that was the best line. So sorry, continue.
Indeed, yes, I think it would have been much improved by just a lot more dumb action with a lot more dumb catchphrases and one-liners, and just, forgetting about trying to put some sort of grand conspiracy plot together, including massive expositional dialogue about secondary characters that we are suddenly meant to care about. And then, so when they inevitably get vamped out and killed, then we are meant to care about the characters that have been in the movie for a grand total of 5 minutes, if that. Give us more.
That question idea.
Yeah, give us more Guten Tag, me. I would actually approve of that. Maybe they can do that for Blood Rain 4. Maybe Blood Rain 4 can be like the Die Hard of the Blood Rain series. I don't know.
All I know is it has to redeem itself after number 3. It's got to do something. But then it can only go up from here, really.
Indeed. And those very long closing credits, did you notice, as I did, that the actual audio quality of the music, I mean, the songs were terrible, but they actually sounded like they were, really recorded badly. I mean, it was, really hollow. They basically got it by playing the music off a tape deck next to a microphone rather than actually properly putting the audio in and mastering it to make it sound suitably professional.
Come to think of it, I do remember something like that, and here was me just thinking it was a problem with the movie, the copy of the movie. But I think it must have been a problem all around. Maybe by the time they got to that last little bit, they'd run out of their $10 million and went, oh God, what are we going to do? They should have put more of it into that bloody awesome last line. But anyway, but yes, I did notice that, Trevor. And unfortunately, here at the Roof Project, we do have to listen to the very, very end of the final credits, even though I hate it every time.
Yes, that's why I like some of the older movies that have nice short ending credits.
Oh, I know. Gotta love the ones that just have the end, logo, finish, perfect. But anyway, not Blood Rain 3.
Absolutely. Well,
maybe Blood Rain 4, we can be a bit more considerate and make some shorter credits for us. But anyway, sorry.
I'm not optimistic, to tell you the truth. But we have gotten to the end of the movie. I mean, there's really not, aside from just some other bizarre stuff like that happens in the movie, like at one point the big bad guy sucks Rain's armpit, which I thought but aside from just moments that were stupid in amongst a stupid movie, I think we might have gotten to the point where we can talk about if there is actually anything redeemable in this movie. Are you ready for this, Christian? Are you set? Do you have your redeeming features there in front of you?
Yeah, let's just say it would be a very short list, short redeeming feature. So, but yeah, I'm willing to give it a go. I'm up for the challenge. I always am.
Excellent. Well, off you go.
Okay. Hey, oh, well, it's only quite short, but my redeeming feature would be the fact that, as we've mentioned, and I'm sure you'll probably say this too, is that last line, Guten Tag, because I think that pretty much just sort of, that line was probably the only redeeming feature that I can find. That's dialogue-wise, but aside from that, I'd probably say I was really quite impressed with some of the cinematography. I know we haven't really touched on it prior to now, but just some of the ways that they did things, I found it really interesting when they did the, when she was dreaming about Hitler or vampire Hitler or having one of those nightmares or whatever, and they did a lot of shaky cameras. I think she was walking through a house or something and then can't remember, or she walks to the bed and wakes up. Oh, I can't remember. There's a lot of this sort of shaky camera, and there's some parts that kind of reminded me a bit of, I think it was Sucker Punch, not anywhere near the quality of it with the cinematography, but it's still, a lot of the shots were very reminiscent of that, and I think it was that shaky handheld stuff. But look, I'm literally struggling here to find anything that I can list, but I think that last line is probably the only thing I can say, and, a few, she sort of interesting tricks with the cinematography, but overall that after a while looked quite claustrophobic and quite cheap. So really there there wasn't much they could do with this direct-to-DVD movie. So Trevor, I'll have to say that, you know, yeah, I don't have any redeeming features except that last line.
Excellent. So you're saying it's not redeemable? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yeah. Probably out of all the movies we've ever watched, this would have to be probably the most irredeemable movie. So that's a pretty big call after, you know, quite a lot of movies. So yeah, I'm pretty certain this is irredeemable by a long shot.
Yeah, I really probably can't say much different. That last line was awesome. That last line was so good, but definitely nowhere near enough to save any other part of this movie. It's obvious that they tried to get some of that spirit of the first movie back with the gratuitous nudity and gore that the first one is quite infamous for. I was trying to work out which was the worst between number one and number two, between all three of them, really. Number two is probably still the worst because it's just plain boring and pointless. I think I've got to say that number one, even though I think it's fairly similar in bad quality wise to this one, the fact that number one's got people in there like Billy Zane, Michelle Rodriguez, Michael Madsen, and Ben Kingsley, for God's sake, all people who should know much, much better than what we got in that first movie, even with the cameo of Meatloaf as a foppish vampire lord. You know, there's just too many people that should have known better in that first movie, so it automatically gets a few points deducted. So I'm going to say that Blood Rain 3 is the best of the trilogy, but
that's saying a lot.
It's still terrible. I've got nothing else to say. I can talk about the terrible acting. I can talk about the ridiculous, unsexy, gratuitous sex scenes, but we've covered over those. This is just so irredeemable that I've run out of words. It's irredeemable, not redeemable. It's gone. It's dead to me. And I hope that Blood Rain 4 doesn't happen, because I was so hoping that we could put this trilogy to bed now and move on to other horrible things to watch.
We should just make a pact that even if another one comes out, we don't watch it. But I know the curiosity will get the better of us, I think.
It will. It will.
Just to see what area he will go next. But yeah, if UA Bowl ends up hearing this by any chance, please, please do not make another one. We're pleading with you. And if you need to know why, just listen to old podcasts and look for Blood Rain, because yeah, every film has been in-depthly analyzed / beaten to a pulp.
Absolutely. Well, that's a very firm, undeniable, irredeemable from both of us. This movie is awful.
Never want to watch it again.
I wholeheartedly.
Sorry, anyone listening out there?
Wholeheartedly agree. However, there's those that don't agree with us, Christian. Even this movie has its fans, as ridiculous as that seems. And I have proof. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, Trevor, if I must. I can't even believe one exists. But anyway, lay it on me.
Well, let's just say that there was a definite theme in the 5-star reviews, and I think this one captures it nicely. To dream the impossible dream. After seeing the original Blood Rain, movie lovers the world over agreed it could never be topped. But then came Blood Rain 2, which cast an even hotter chick in the lead role, and thus became an instant classic of its kind. Again, we all agreed no one could ever improve upon that achievement. But the creators of Blood Rain 3 realised the only way to make the films even better was to include everyone's favourite villains, Nazis. Hot chicks, vampires, Nazis, lesbians, this one has it all. You will not believe your eyes and ears. You will not believe the feelings in your crotch. Whether you're a male or female, when you see Natasha Malty acting so hard it looks like it hurts and utilising the full extent of her T&A, talents and abilities, for those unfamiliar with the terminology. Now, the only questions I have are, will there be a Blood Rain 4? Will Natasha Malty still be hot enough to be offered the role? If so, will she get naked? 5 stars.
Well, we all know what he's got in mind for what he's looking out for in these films. Gosh.
Yeah.
He seems like he'd be happy with her doing anything by the sounds of it. So I think he's looking at it through rose-coloured glasses. So, or maybe he watched a different movie than us. You do wonder.
Again, too many specifics in the review. We can't shift the blame to a different movie.
Yeah. Damn it. Oh, well, there has to be, you know, it has to exist in both camps. There has to be people that love it out there. So I find it hard to believe. But hey.
Well, there we go. Despite that 5-star review, I don't think that's changed either Christian's or mine. I don't think that's changed our mind on the quality of Blood Rain 3. And yeah, definitely never going to watch this thing again. It's gone. It's over. Let's forget about it. And Christian, I think we should move on.
Move on. We might sort of get out of the Blood Rain or the trilogy or franchise genre, and we're going to go back to an 80s movie actually. Ooh. And interesting, yeah. And actually, believe it or not, a movie that's I will already say from the outset is a much, much higher quality film than Blood Rain. And I'd be interested to see what both of us have to say about it. I have seen this film several times. It's always one that you do watch sort of with I suppose the cult film sort of angle and sort of go, this has become sort of, you know, quite an infamous film due to, you know, a couple of the performances within the film and film history around it, surrounding the film. And as a result, that sort of infamy has sort of surrounded the film so much that it's hard to sort of differentiate. Is it actually a bad movie, or is it actually a movie that just has a few really over the top bad performances that make it essentially a bad movie? We're going to go back to a movie that was actually based on a biopic about a famous Hollywood actress. We're looking at Mummy Dearest from 1981.
Oh, I've never actually seen this movie, so. But I have heard a few things about it.
Interesting things about it, I'm sure. Let's just say it's a film that was written by Christina Crawford, who was Joan Crawford's daughter, pretty much saying that her mum was an abusive mum, and it pretty much documented her upbringing, you know. And of course, this was made into a sensationalized Hollywood film with Faye Dunaway playing Joan Crawford. However, in subsequent years, the film is being sort of overshadowed by the fact that Faye Dunaway pretty much chews scenery from one side of the screen to the other. You know, you cannot stop looking. Is it a train wreck, or is it an Academy Award winning performance that was never nominated for an Academy Award? So I'm really interested to see what you have to say about this, Trevor, because it was made by a mainstream company, Paramount Pictures. I think some areas where it was nominated for Academy and won Academy Awards. So it's interesting that a film of this kind that's had this such bad reputation. So I'm interested to see your point of view, Trevor, and see if you think it's a bad movie or just a movie that had good intentions that just had quite a few bad elements that went against it that made it a camp classic that it's become today. So I'll be interested to see what you think.
Well, I must admit, I am intrigued, and it's quite fun, I think, going in pretty blank on this one. I've heard of it. I know it's got that reputation as a bit of a cult classic. So yeah, I'm very interested in seeing where this takes us. You've got me intrigued.
Yeah, I'm glad, Trevor, and I can definitely say from the outset this will be better than Blood Rain. Gosh, I hope I'm not wrong. Because I also did like The Apple, so and Trevor didn't. So we so my opinions and your opinions can differ somewhat. So I'll be interested to see what you think of Mummy Dearest for our next podcast, going back to an 80s movie. So
Excellent. Mummy Dearest. I will give it my all and then see what I come up with it. What I come up with about it. And of course, if anybody out there has seen Mummy Dearest and would like to suggest their redeeming features, or if you're if you want to comment on Blood Rain 3, did you think we were too harsh on it? Do you think it's so bad that we were too generous? We would love to know, and it's super duper easy to get in touch with us. You can send us an email to therufusproject@gmail.com. You can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, and leave a comment below this very episode. Or alternatively, you can find the Rufus Project super easily on Twitter and Facebook and chat with us there. We would love to hear from you.
Definitely, and always up for some suggestions for films too, because as you can hear with the podcast each fortnight, we definitely come up with some doozies, but I'm sure there's heaps out there that we haven't thought of yet. There's some that we probably don't want to think of.
Absolutely. There's some that have crossed my mind, and I'm thinking if I should just push them out altogether or go down those rabbit holes.
Or get them out of your system.
I think there's something that I'm not going to touch ever.
Yeah, I think that's the wise. Unless I make you do it.
Very true.
That, I'm glad I have that power.
That's a great thing. And we can have different opinions and we can suggest movies that the other one may not want to go anywhere near. And I appreciate that. That works well.
Definitely. So, well, I look forward to chatting to you next time, Trevor, and, hearing any feedback from our listeners. So always a pleasure to chat so bad it's bad movies. I don't know if we can call it that.
Yeah, it was just terrible. Terrible works.
Especially after Blood Rain 3. Oh, whoops, I mentioned the name of that movie. Bad idea.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you very much, Christian, and we'll chat next time. See you then.
Thanks, Trevor. See you then.
Boy, oh boy,
is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should've got bad? I love dodgy creatures, but we wanna know what the redeeming features.
Boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we wanna know, is it fun to be had?
Boy, oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Boy, oh boy. Fire inside.